Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The writer, podcaster, and web series host Ashley C. Ford has written or guest edited for some of the country's largest publications, including New York Magazine, Teen Vogue, Elle, and BuzzFeed. She's also hosted such podcasts as HBO's Lovecraft Country Radio, it's about the popular TV series, obviously. But in her first book, Ford turns her critical lens on her family, her upbringing in the Midwest, and herself. In a candid memoir titled Somebody's Daughter, Ford unflinchingly shares some difficult truths that she learned very early in life. She was raised by a difficult and loving and stressed out mom. Her father was incarcerated from the time she was less than a year old. She had a sweet relationship with a young man that had to change into something else when he came out to her. And she was the victim of rape, the same crime for which her father was found guilty. Ford examines the complexities of familial love and along the way grapples with the murkiness of what it takes to love someone and to accept love. The book has received a lot of praise in recent weeks, including a glowing interview on Fresh Air just yesterday, as well as a review in the New York Times that reads in part, Ford's brilliance as a writer, her superpower, is a portrayal of her mother who remains unnamed that is both damning and sympathetic, one that renders this complicated older Black woman's full humanity. Somebody's Daughter came out this month, and we are so happy that it brings Ashley C. Ford to all of it. Welcome, Ashley.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
So you're known for your writing and your analysis of other people and other cultural moments. So what skills from that work were you able to use when you sat down to write about your own life?
I think the number one skill that I needed and that I tend to need in all things is just the deep belief that I can do it, that I can accomplish it. And that is harder than you would think it is. You know, I think people think, you know, oh, I just have to believe in myself. And if I believe in myself, the confidence will just come. And it's a practice, especially when you have a traumatic upbringing, to relearn how to trust yourself.
How did you go about writing this?
I would say that I went about writing this over the course of 10 years, on and off, trying desperately at times to spend more time working on it and to spend more time doing what I needed to be doing. But it was tough. It was tougher than I thought it was going to be. It was tough emotionally.
I was going to ask, you know, there's some things you can sort of expect when you sit down to revisit your life. You kind of know a little bit of your own narrative and you know what are going to be the difficult spots. But I'm wondering, what was a challenge you didn't see coming that caught you and you thought, oh, did not expect that?
I honestly didn't see coming that in order to do myself justice, my child self, my young self justice, that I was going to have to learn how to love my child self and my young self. I thought that, you know, I'd done the work processing a lot of this stuff. I'd done the work learning to trust myself, learning to talk about these things and have real conversations about tough topics. But I had not forgiven myself for being a child. I hadn't forgiven myself for feeling and ultimately being helpless against the things that harmed me. And I was shocked to find that my young self, my child self, would not give me what I needed to tell the story the way I needed to tell it without first assuring that part of me that it was safe to do so and that I would keep them safe. And, you know, children are not fools. Even the child inside us is not a fool and knows when you're lying, knows when your intention is not pure. And so I had to make sure I had pure intention. I had to make sure it came from a place of love.
When did the title Somebody's Daughter come to you?
Well, I am notoriously bad at titling things in general, like just awful at it. Like it's a gene that I did not receive by any measure. But when the proposal was finally finished and I had worked so hard on the proposal, you know, and my agent was ready to start sending it out to different publishing houses to see if anybody would be interested, you know, I had a pretty terrible title, as is my, you know, general thing to do. And she said, you have to come up with a new title. You got to change the title.
All right, wait. You have to tell us what the terrible title was now.
Oh my gosh. It was something like Don't Look Back, or like, or Finding Yourself in the Past. Like, it was so bad.
Yeah, those aren't good. Those aren't good, Ashley.
It was not good. Please, thank you for affirming that for me. I knew that it was true, but the affirmation helped. And so somebody's daughter popped into my head, and it felt right, and it sounded right. And it is the only time in my life I have titled anything well and accurately at the same time.
My guest is Ashley C. Ford. The name of her book is Somebody's Daughter. The book structure, it's bookended with your father. It begins with the news that your father's being released from prison, but then we get into your earliest memories, and we'll talk about that in a minute, but then it ultimately ends with his release. How did you decide on that structure?
It ultimately was what felt right in the story. Initially, the book had a lot more in it about my father, but I realized that writing about him so much in the middle was really me trying not to write about myself. Mm-hmm. And it's a memoir. So I needed to write about myself and be honest about myself on these pages. You know, this story is my story, but it's also the story of like the journey of having my dad be this fantasy and having him be an avatar for good in my mind, and then ultimately having to accept his humanity and deciding to do that for myself and not for anyone else.
What about your childhood memories? What about them did you want to share with others that you felt could be beneficial for someone to read?
I think it's really easy for people to have the same misunderstanding that I had about anger, about what happened to me or what I went through as a child, which is that people think anger and love can't exist in the same place. And they think that their love for their parents or for the people who raised them or for the adults who affected them in some way as children, that their love for these people or their appreciation for their ultimate humanity means that anger can't also exist in the emotional experience of that person. How can I love them? How can I be grateful to them for what they've done? How can I express that I understand them and be angry with them for the harm they caused, intentionally or unintentionally, at the same time? And it turns out that it's very easy. It's accepting the reality. And in reality, sometimes we are angry with people we love. Sometimes we harm people we love, and the expectation shouldn't be, at least to me, in my definition of love, that where love exists, accountability cannot, or truth cannot. I think that they can all exist at the same time, and we'd all be healthier and happier for it. And I wanted people to understand that these things happen to you, and it's okay that you feel something about what happened to you.
What themes did you see to start to emerge while you were writing this book that maybe you really weren't aware of before working on this, and really, especially in the final stages, as you started to put it all together?
One of the things that my therapist and I have come up with when I'm in a place of believing that my actions have a greater impact than they actually have, especially those that I would traditionally code as negative or bad things, where I have to accept that I am not God. Mm-hmm. And I have to, what we call, un-God myself, which essentially means to stop blaming myself for things that are not in my control, could not be in my control, and never were in my control. That means that I cannot blame myself. I cannot say, well, you know, I was being mouthy in that moment as a kid, so maybe I deserve to get punched. No, mm-hmm. No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. The way the power dynamic works in the situation with child and parent or child and caregiver or adult and child, period, it is their job to show me the appropriate way to respond to being angry or frustrated. And if they don't show me the proper way to do that, and if they hold me to adult standards as a child, that is not my failure. It's theirs.
My guest is Ashley C. Ford. The name of her memoir is Somebody's Daughter. And Ashley, I'm going to ask you to read this passage that it's been written about a lot. And that's why I want you to read it rather than try to me explain it. In this, I'll set it up a little bit. Your mother was someone very physical with you when you were young. She would hit you. She'd give you a whooping. And you describe a moment when you've moved in with your grandmother and your great-grandfather for a while. You visited your mother and she was physical with you. This is a passage that describes what happened after you returned to your great-grandfather's home.
I touched all the things that reminded me of my new life in Missouri, where no one hit me. I could read as much as I wanted, and there was no rusty red stains left in rings around the bathtub. I spoke to my grandmother without looking at her. Don't ever make me leave again, okay? I don't want to leave again. She looked down at me, then into the backyard, into the places I played without permission. She grabbed my hand and walked me out toward the tree, grabbing a shovel and a burlap bag next to the grill on the way. We walked farther and farther back until we were in the part of our land where my great-grandfather let the grasses grow long. My grandmother stomped around a bit, then staked the shovel's blade into the dirt. She dug slowly and with purpose, like she was sneaking up on the earth spread out before us. The ground was soft, so it wasn't long before she told me to come closer. I leaned over the hole and saw a garden snake. No, two, three, four. A lot of garden snakes. They were in some sort of knot, though not stuck together. They moved quickly and deliberately over and around one another. They were not fighting, and they did not seem to be trying to get away from us or anything else. What are they doing, Grandma? My grandmother stared into the hole. They're loving each other, baby. She reached into the bag, poured lighter fluid into the hole, then a lit match. The grass in and around the hole burned, and then so did the snakes. My first instinct was to reach in and throw them as far as I could to safety, but I hesitated when I remembered their bite. I waited too long to do them any good. The snakes did not slither away or thrash around as they burned. They held each other tighter. Even as the scales melted from their bodies, their inclination was to squeeze closer to the other snakes wrapped around them. Their green lengths blackened and bubbled, causing the flesh that simmered underneath each individual metallic hood to ooze. They did not panic. They did not run. I started to cry. You will have to go back. We'll both go back home. Your mama misses you. My grandmother reached over and grabbed my hand, both of us still staring into the hole. These things catch fire without letting each other go. We don't give up on our people. We don't stop loving them. She looked into my face, her eyes watering at the bottoms. Not even when we're burning alive.
Ashley, what did you learn in that moment?
I felt in that moment that my grandmother was telling me that it was going to be hard and it was going to hurt to love people, and especially to love our people. But giving up on them and giving up on us as a family, as a unit, wasn't an option. And I believed it. I believed her. And, you know, I think in some ways I still do.
My guest is Ashley C. Ford. We are talking about her memoir, Somebody's Daughter. We'll have more with Ashley after a quick break. This is All of It. You're listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is writer Ashley C. Ford. The name of her memoir is Somebody's Daughter. Ashley, one of the themes in your book is about your relationship to your own body. And you relay very candidly how you went through puberty relatively early and how your mom and your grandmother's protectiveness of the way the outside world would see you now sort of just crash lands on your innocence. As a grown woman, when you look back on it, even if their methods weren't right, were they right to protect you that way?
I think that it would have been more effective for them to give me a great sense of the power of my body, and a sort of a love for my body. I definitely learned from my mother and my grandmother how to protect my body. I learned how to look out for someone who wanted to harm me or wanted to take advantage of me in some way. And I think that self-protection element is important and has saved me a lot of trouble in my life, and I'm glad that I got it. I wish there had been more of an emphasis on wanting to protect my body, not because I didn't want to be harmed or not because, you know, it technically in some warped way belonged to either my mother or my future husband. I wish that I had been encouraged to protect it because I love it and because it's precious and because it's mine and because nobody has any right to it but me. I think that would have been a more effective and definitely more enduring way to impress that message upon me.
During this period of time, you know, as your body's becoming a more mature body, but you're still a young girl, how did the way the outside world and others react to you inform the way you started to think about your body at that time?
Oh, I mean, it was terrible. It was terrible the way other people reacted to my changing body. I mean, yes, it was disgusting the way men reacted to be, you know, propositioned by grown men when I'm walking home from middle school, to be, you know, at the Black Expo in Indianapolis with my family and be 12 years old and have a grown inebriated man try to follow me back to the hotel room where I'm staying with, you know, my younger siblings or something like that. Or in a lot of cases, more than that in one room, you know, we didn't have money to be everybody having their own room. So it was awful. But I will say that, like, some of the times that hurt me the most actually came from women and mostly teachers. The way my body was policed in an educational setting, you know, in order to not be distracting to boys, I guess, was incredibly distracting to me and incredibly demeaning to me. You know, I had a teacher, I was hugging, we went on a tour of the high school and I knew a bunch of people at the high school because I played in the high school band. And this was my eighth grade year of my last year of middle school. And we go do this tour and, you know, I see some friends and I give them hugs. And we got back to the middle school and the teacher told the entire class that I had been shaking my breasts at every boy I came across at the high school. She said this in front of me. She said it in front of class. And that is not uncommon for girls to go through. It's just not. When I tell a story like that, girls and women come out of the woodwork mm-hmm. to say that happened to me, that something like that happened to me. It's disgusting. And it's going on every day. Like, these are things that happened to me when I was a kid, and I'm 34 now, and I think kids are having the same experience. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's different.
My guest is Ashley C. Ford. The name of her memoir is Somebody's Daughter. Your father was incarcerated from the time you were very, very little. And in letters, your dad wrote to you while incarcerated. He expresses this sort of limitless, over-the-top, extraordinary love for you. What did his letters offer to you when you were young?
When I was young, his letters offered me a version of myself that I believed in, but that I had no, and I mean no confirmation otherwise was accurate. I seem to just upset people a lot. You know, I think one of the things that is the result of my trauma is that I read microaggressions and micro expressions incredibly well. And I tend to react to what I see on people's faces and not necessarily the words that they're saying to me. And even when you do that in a kind and compassionate way, a lot of people don't like to be seen. And it upsets them. And that's something that I did from a very young age. And I upset a lot of people. So my dad telling me that I was beautiful and I was brilliant and I was all those things. I wanted those things so desperately to be true. And his word was the only word I had to hold on to really maintain that hope.
Did you ever question it? His word, his letters, what he said?
Of course. Of course I did. I absolutely did. And it didn't matter in my mind how I saw myself as much as the fact that he saw me that way. Like, if he saw me that way, then maybe I could be that. Maybe I could grow into that. Maybe he saw this thing in me that I was getting closer to, and one day it would show up and I would have it, you know, like I would be the person that he saw. I would be the person that he wanted me to be. In the meantime, I am who I am, and I guess I just have to live with that.
What did you think when you learned why your father was in prison, that he was in prison for rape?
I thought initially, just based off the way I felt about myself then, I thought, of course the person who sees the good in me and knows the good in me is a monster. Of course. That's how I felt.
Why, of course?
Because I had that strong self-protective element and none of the self-love and very little self-worth. And so even though I knew that I needed to protect myself from danger, I was not convinced that I was not the danger. And I wasn't convinced that even if I was worth protecting, that I was worth loving or cherishing. And because I was not convinced of that, and honestly felt quite convinced of the opposite, it just made sense to me that the person who did say they saw the good in me and saw the brilliance in me and the beauty in me was a person who did an evil, evil thing. That felt apt at the time.
Ashley, almost every interview that you've done, the ones that I've read and I've listened to, it comes to this point when someone notes that you write about being sexually assaulted, and then you learn about your father was found guilty of raping two women. Mm-hmm. And people tend to put that in the same question. How do you feel about people connecting the two? Should they? Is there a connection about this? If you just take them as pieces of information about your life, or do you take them as individual pieces of information about your life?
They are individual pieces about my life that are connected in their cruelty. Mm-hmm. And because of the thought processes that I grew up with, were easily conflated for me. Easily conflated to think that they must be connected in some way. And so I get why people ask me the question with both, you know, things in it, even though, to be perfectly honest, it's probably incredibly common. It is probably incredibly common that rapists and people who have committed rape, who have children who have been assaulted or have been molested or have been raped. That is probably a very common thing. I don't think we care generally that it's probably very common, but it's worth talking about. So I don't really mind. I'm an interviewer. I ask people questions all the time, and I can tell when someone's asking a question in a scandalous or sensational way and when a person is just trying to make connections in a story and they're doing their best. So when people make that connection, generally, they really are doing their best. And I'm totally okay with that because I remember what it was like when that was the connection that I made. And it was one of the only connections that I'd made as it pertains to my father committing assault and me being assaulted. But the truth is a lot of people are assaulted. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have been sexually assaulted. And they all have their own stories. And quite a few of them might look like mine.
Your book is so candid about your childhood and your family. How has the family received it?
You know, really well so far. Mm-hmm. Everybody has been incredibly loving, incredibly supportive. I honestly believe that any person who loves me, every person who loves me, was more grateful for the opportunity to see me more clearly than saddened or angry about my perception of them as a child. And that's lucky. That's really, really lucky. But I'm okay with being lucky. And I prepared for all of the options. It, you know, it could have gone left, but it's mostly just been really loving, especially from my siblings, who have been fantastic.
This is sort of off topic, but not really, but sort of. You're married to a fellow writer, and I follow you on Instagram. And you had... your wedding dress was Christian Siriano.
Yes, it was a gift.
I need to know the story because it is. You looked gorgeous, and it is like the fairy tale dress.
I have a friend who is much wealthier than I am, and likely will ever be. But when she and I connected years ago, as friends, right after Kelly and I started dating. You know, we were one day emailing each other about love and about how in love we are, with our respective partners and how beautiful and frightening, that is and can be. And I randomly said, you know, I'd never even really wanted or thought about getting married, to anybody else, but I love this guy and it's wild how much I love this guy. And I just keep thinking to myself, you know, the wedding dress of my dreams is like a Christian Siriano wedding dress. And I just really, really wanted one because he's an amazing designer and because I'm a bigger woman and he creates amazing, beautiful silhouettes in fashion for bigger women or curvier women. And so I just thought that would be, you know, a dream. Never thought it would happen, but when I said that I was engaged, this friend reached out to me and said, I'm getting you a Christian Siriano wedding dress. That is my wedding present to you, and I'm setting up a meeting with Christian, and you'll go in, and the two of you will design your dress together, and I was freaking out about it. I watched Project Runway when he won.
Right.
Like it was an amazing thing. And I, you know, I was a fashion major for a little while in college And it was just a very big deal for me. And I put on that dress, and I hadn't really gotten emotional about things happening with the wedding. But when I put on that dress, I bawled. I just cried so hard. And it's a beautiful dress. It's the best thing. I'm hoping one day to be able to pass it on to someone, because it's a beautiful dress in a size that those kinds of dresses aren't usually made. And I think it's still got a lot of life in it.
You talked it into existence. Anyway, everybody go to Twitter and check out her dress. It's gorgeous. My guest has been Ashley C. Ford. Her new memoir is called Somebody's Daughter. Ashley, thank you for spending so much time with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.